Hey everybody, it's Rob Rashawn. I'm out loud with Rob and Cody, and today we have a special guest. And so back when I was young, you know, early 90s, late 80s, when I was hunting hard and just a kid, you know, it was all about Michael Jordan and Bo Jackson and then Alan Grubb. He was the main man when we was hunting, and today we have Alan on with us. Thanks for coming on, Alan.
Not a problem. Glad to be here.
Alan, you know, you paved the way for a lot of us younger guys, local guys. You know, back in there wasn't social media. There wasn't 1,000 hunting shows. You know, there was just hunters, and you was one of them that I know me and Jerry and a lot of the local guys paid attention to. And on my very first podcast, I mentioned you, and just to get things going and let, you know, update some people who maybe didn't listen to that. I shot my first big buck, and actually when Alan walked downstairs here, he pointed to it. He didn't realize that that was the same buck, but it was in early 90s. You know, I was 1 year out of high school, and I'd had that buck in the back of the truck, and I was tickled to death, and I was looking for somebody to show it to. And, of course, I'd always heard about Alan Grubb. Alan Grubb, you know, he's the big buck hunter. We all want to be like Alan Grubb. And I'm going down the road, and someone pulls me over and comes up there, and I'm like, crap, you know, it's Alan Grubb. And he's patting me on the back, and he's congratulating me and telling me what a good job I've done. And I mean, that was a big deal for me. I'd been like Michael Jordan walking on the playground there with basketball, you know, in his hands. So I thought it was a good story. And Alan, I don't think it was another 20 years before we met at that Coyote tournament.
Yeah, at least 20 years.
at least 20 years or more.
Yeah, the turkeys and stuff, remember? And then the coyotes.
You know? Yeah.
And, yeah, that's the buck right there.
That's the buck sitting right next to you. That's crazy, isn't it?
Oh, it's nice.
I just thought that was
I'll take them like that all day long.
That was just a neat story.
Yeah.
And, to not see you again for 20 years, of course, I'd keep up with, you know, the Alan Grubb stories. And I know you're big in fishing and everything else, but you know for hunting. And, I mean, what's been going on here lately with?
Well, not a whole lot. I don't get to hunt as much as I used to. And, I still love to hunt. I hunt Ohio a lot. During the rut, and I've hurt my shoulder, so I don't get to bow hunt much anymore. And I got a few friends, and I still help them out, and we still do pretty good. Can't climb the hills like I used to,
yeah.
But you young guys is just, you know, incredible, really, what you all can do now. You know, when I was first doing it, there was no game cameras, and
no.
You know, you learned everything out of a Field and Stream magazine. Basically, mm-hmm. Actually, there wasn't even no videos out for a long time especially when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Everything you learned is just by spending time in the woods and some of the older guys. But there wasn't a lot of guys back in the bow hunt. I didn't know but one person to bow hunt other than me.
I mean, back in those days, Alan, there wasn't very many deer being harvested, especially a mature buck. I mean, can you remember your first mature buck?
Yeah, I remember my first one. Yeah. I killed one that was probably just getting mature, and I killed him actually on our farm, and I shot him with a gun, and it was quite the event. My dad got to be involved in it. He's passed on now, but it was a pretty nice buck, and he had harvested one the year before, and it was a real nice one. And I didn't start hunting until I was about 13, because he was in the Air Force. We were all over. And he didn't have a lot of time to take me hunting. So most everything I learned was by myself or magazines, you know, because didn't hardly know anybody that hunted. Me and one other buddy. And but along come, you know, back then the season was 3 days in November.
Isn't that
something? Two in December.
Think about that.
And that's all you had.
Yeah.
And, you know, and a little bit of a bow season. And back then the bows, if people saw the bows that we used back in, the first compounds that come out, the old Whitetail 2 and
right.
Ben Pearson Shadow 100s and stuff like that, they would laugh.
Yeah.
It's boing, you know, not much strength to them.
So much has changed now.
I used a recurve the first few years, but I remember we used to rabbit hunt with our bows and go along the creeks and try to shoot them. And every now and then, you know, you get lucky and pop one.
Mm-hmm.
But that was always fun back in the groundhogs and stuff like that. But, when I really got serious into deer hunting is probably in 1980. Mm-hmm. And we started hunting pretty hard then. And we started going to Ohio a few years after that. And Ohio is, you know, it's a, that's where you want to be.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Wow. Even back then, it was.
Yeah. There's a lot of nice deer over there.
Mm-hmm.
But, like these deer you have on the wall, you know, it's great bucks.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
And you seen the first one. But that's crazy.
You got a whole lot more to go.
I hope so.
I took a few trips and done some, you know, different things other than whitetail. I've done a couple bear hunts. And,
yeah.
And I've been caribou hunting above the Arctic Circle and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And enjoyed every one of them.
Well, I know I've seen you smallmouth fishing. I remember when I was young, you was always on the largemouth.
Oh, yeah. I love to fish. And I just don't get to do as much as I used to. You know, being a grandpa, and then the swing shift kind of kills a lot of that.
Yeah.
But we're trying to get a hunting trip together right now, trying to maybe go to Montana and next year.
Uh-huh.
And, or Alberta. I've got some people I know there.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that goes.
So you're still hitting it hard. You know, Alan, you was talking about the game cameras and how much things have changed since you was, you know, you was consistently putting mature bucks on the ground before the game cameras with, you know, bows that were not nothing what we have now. And, you know, in my mind, I mean, I can remember not having the game cameras, but when I started making hay and consistently taking big bucks, I had the cameras, and for me it cuts down the time.
Oh yeah.
Where you had to get in there and find those bucks. Now you may see big sign, but that doesn't always equate to a big buck.
No.
So you may waste some time there. And as you know, there's a limited amount of time for a sweet spot to kill a mature buck, or in my opinion.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you guys have paved the way. You guys had to deal with that. You know, Alan, before we started, there was something that we was talking about, and we, you know, season starts this weekend.
Yeah. Here it is. And ready to go.
And you brought up a good point, something that I was trying to beat in people's heads, but you just put it in better words than I did. That's for sure. Entrance and exit.
Yeah. It's important. It's important.
Would you like to talk to people a little bit about, you know, you was talking about seeing these big bucks in the fields. Everybody's seeing them in the fields right now, and just talk a little bit about what we talked about when we come on.
Well, you know, they're in their bachelor groups early in the year, like this. They're easy to see, you know, August and September. They'll be in the fields, and usually not a whole lot else to eat. And people will see their deer in the fields and say, okay, I've got him right here. He's coming out by that big tree. Well, they'll go put their stand up there by the big tree, and then they'll hunt him the first morning,
mm-hmm.
and he's in the field, or he's right inside that big tree. When you park and you walk across the field, he knows you're there. He sees you. And you get by with the little bucks like that. With them big bucks, they see you coming, and you've blown it. And then that evening, you know, you go and you sit there, and he's not there. He comes out way down the field. He knows. He's still going to feed in the same area.
Sure.
You're just going to run him nocturnal. And if you learn to hold back, stay out of there. If you see him in the evenings coming out, you hunt him in the evenings. And if you can find a way to get in and out, I'll tell you a good trick a lot of people don't think of. If you're in that tree, let's say you're 15, 20 yards inside the field, and he comes out in the evenings, and you miss him. Let's say he comes out 30, 40 yards down, you can't get a shot at him. Have a buddy pick you up with his four-wheeler. Matty, don't get out of that stand. Have him drive right up. The deer will move out of the field, see the four-wheeler, used to him, not that spook, pick you up, away you go. You leave less scent, and you don't have to worry about it as much. And now you fooled him. Now you got another chance at him. Sometimes you get, if you do things like that, you can get two or three, maybe four times, you know, chances at him.
Yeah.
If you have a creek or something there, use the creek. Think about your scent you leave. They'll come in at midnight to smell you. They know, they'll walk right back to your stand.
Right.
They know where you're at.
Some fine details, like you're saying, coming in at midnight, you know, you go in and check your camera at noon.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. You may not jump anyone up. You may be out. I mean, he's going to be bedded more likely. Like I said, you may not scare him initially, but when he comes back at midnight, 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, your scent's still there if you're not careful.
And a lot of scent early, because you're hot, you're sweaty. You'd be surprised how long that scent stays there.
Mm-hmm.
If you brought a bloodhound in to trail someone, they can do it 2 days later. You think about that. And, you know, and a deer, he can, I think they learn to differentiate, you know, the fear factor.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a farmer or is that a guy with a bow in his hand?
Yeah.
You know, I think they learn that. They somehow, they sense that, or they smell that in it, I don't know what it is. They're very good at it. But if you just think about how to get in and get out, and morning times early in the season, unless you can come over the backside, is a bad deal.
Yeah.
Some people get lucky and they get by with it, but it doesn't work a whole lot of times.
The percentage is not with you early season, right?
And the trick about having someone pick you up with a four-wheeler, or even drive their truck out there and pick you up.
Yeah.
Because when you come out of the stand and he's out in that field 75 yards and I almost got a shot at him.
Yeah.
There he stands. Gosh, I'll get him tomorrow. And you walk out the stand. Okay. You've educated him.
Yeah.
You may get him the next time. He may come back. But that's what runs these deer nocturnal, and that's what makes them really smart. They're not smart, they're observant.
Yeah.
And they use your lack of smartness against you. And
they want to survive.
Right. And they're also lazy. You know, deer are lazy.
Yeah.
They want to do the easiest thing they can. Mm-hmm. But I noticed that the guys who consistently kill decent bucks, and they don't even have to be fully mature bucks, but a decent buck. You know, you see a buck that you think's decent, don't worry about it. Mm-hmm. If you want to harvest that deer, you do it. That is a trophy. Gun, bow, spear, whatever you want to, you know.
It's hunting.
Yeah, never let anybody knock you down for what you used or what you shot. Mm-hmm. If your 4-point looked good to you, and you got a legal tag, take it.
I agree.
I have a problem now with these guys who want to take their extra deer.
Yeah, that's no good.
It's bad, and it's taught in the families and stuff. But a lot of guys, they'll shoot a buck, they won't tag it, they'll go after another one, they'll shoot it. And they do that 2 or 3 times a season, then they wonder where all the big bucks went.
Yeah.
Well, you killed them all. you're a great hunter. You didn't need to do that.
No.
You should have took your one and maybe helped someone else.
Yeah.
And so I've always tried very hard with people I hunt with to not ever have that happen. And I learn a lot. I learn every time I go out.
Yeah.
But some of these bucks they're slick. Mm. And I shot one, and it was funny. I had a guy watching me when I done it. I saw this buck every morning coming home from work in an open field, big field. No way to get to him. He's standing out there. And he would just choo-choo-choo jog right across there and up on the hill. And it was really thick in there where he was going. And I knew I wasn't going to get on that hill. I had no access to the backside. Actually, couldn't even hunt that hill. And I could hunt to the edge of it. And the way I got a shot at that deer is I had a buddy drop me off early muzzleloader season. And I noticed that every time there was a fog on, that deer stayed out in that field a little bit longer.
Mm-hmm.
And he dropped me off a nice foggy morning. I knew it was coming. And I crawled out there and I lay in that field. And I had cars stopping and kind of wondering, is that guy all right? And I would kind of wave him.
Yeah.
And about the time that fog started to clear a little bit where I could see, I raised up and there was a doe 40 yards from me. So he was kind of looking at me and I knew he was there.
Yeah.
Couldn't see him. Well, my buddy was in his house about 300 yards away watching this.
Yeah.
And I just kept my head down, and when I saw that doe walk past, I knew he was there. I just caught that muzzleloader and eased up, and there he was. And I popped him right there.
Oh, man.
And it was great.
You know? Yeah.
And I would have never, ever killed that deer if it wasn't for a buddy's help.
Uh-huh.
And observing, you know, just paying attention to the fog and, you know, how can I get this deer? Couldn't hunt him any other way. It's a luck.
Right.
It really was luck. You know, loved it.
Paying attention, like you said, the fine details.
And he was heavy. And, he was a nice buck. And my buddy always teases me about me crawling on my belly to kill that deer.
Yeah.
Sometimes you do what you can do.
Oh, yeah.
And also, the ones I've harvested, I've had a lot get away on me. You know, just missed opportunities.
Sure.
Missed them. I never was a real good shot with a bow or a gun. I have to get close.
Yeah.
And I've missed a few nice ones. And it hurts when it happens.
Oh, yeah. I've done it.
Yeah. And it hurts when it happens. And I've had a couple that I've hit get away on me. And that really hurts. I shot one 2 years ago. No, 3 years ago in Ohio. And I watched him for 3 days. And I couldn't get it on him. Mm. I mean, he just wouldn't get close enough. And it was real thick. About 190 yards from me. Maybe with the muzzleloader. So that third day I was in there, I saw him here. He come in the same, he's going to bed in that same area. And I said, okay, that's enough of this. I come down out of the stand, watch him, and I stalked up on him. Well, he laid down, I didn't know it, and I got a little too close. About 70 yards, he jumped up, and when he stopped, he turned and looked at me, and I shot him, and I hit him hard. And I thought, I got him. Mm-hmm. Searched for 2 days, never did find him.
Broke my heart.
Ain't that sad? Oh, and he was nice.
It happens. That's hunting.
Yeah.
And I know I've been there several times.
Oh, yeah.
Jerry, you've been there a few times.
Oh, yeah. Well, you,
it's heartbreaking.
You younger guys and the crew coming up under you all, they're just so more educated. And with the food plots we have, everybody puts out now and for years, and the deer are better and bigger. And,
yeah, there's just more deer.
Yeah, and the game cameras and stuff, and the bows they shoot now. They're just
they're like rifles.
Deadly.
Well, you know, a bow that you shoot now.
Well, and it's all good.
It's good.
Everything, every bit of that's good.
And it's because of guys like you. And I'm going to tell you why, Alan. Because of conservation is why we have the deer we have now. Now, why do we have that conservation? It's money. Well, why do we have that money? In my opinion, it was guys like you that were killing big bucks back when we was young and we was watching.
Right.
So guess what? We wanted to go out there and hunt.
Right.
You brought a lot of interest into hunting. Do you understand what I mean by that?
And
that's the way I feel about that.
And, conservation is a big part of it.
Yeah, and that built the conservation because more people, man, look what Alan Grubb killed. Well, everybody in Greenup County, Lewis County, and everybody in the tri-state was pumped up because they seen your bucks and we was wanting to go hunt. And for all the people around the country that are like you, the local legends, that's why we are where we are now, because without the money, there wouldn't be the deer. We know that. There wasn't before because we didn't have no money for the law enforcement and stuff like that to protect them.
When you see that game warden, walk up and talk to them.
Yeah.
You know, they don't mind helping you out.
No.
And they are great. They're there for you.
Mm-hmm.
And the only guy who's afraid of a game warden is someone who ain't doing the right thing.
Yeah,
is
making a mistake.
And, I've never had a problem. Carl Sires was a good friend of mine. And he loved checking me.
Sure.
He loved it. He'd catch me out, he'd check me. But, you know, it was never a problem. And those guys, too, they helped out a lot. And the women that are hunting now.
Oh, man.
And they're good. They're really
they're better
shots than I ever was.
And, you know, I'd had Aaron and Melissa on from Wildlife Women here recently in the last month. And they're a group of women, and what they're doing is helping introduce other women that might not have a way to get into the outdoors. And, you know, they're going through them to get them in the outdoors. And, I mean, it's just good to see stuff like that, and they're always getting together and doing all kind of things. I don't know if a group of guys could do what they did or not. We'd all be arguing and trying to force each other's opinions on.
More than one.
That's the way it goes. Like I said, Alan, things have come a long ways because of guys like you, and it's just good to see you up here. And you're going to try to hunt again this year, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. I'm not going to hunt this weekend coming up, but
right.
For them guys that are going to, if they'll think about it. And they'll think more of how not to mess up than the harvesting, and you'll do better, and you might get a shot in. Because if you mess up a couple times, and all these younger guys are out there, they're seeing some nice deer.
Yeah.
And there's going to be some nice ones harvested. But if they'll pay attention to stuff a little more, it'll help them.
Yeah.
It's going to be hot, and they'll be sweaty, and that's what them deer love to catch you on.
Oh, yeah, like I said, and, you know, some of the mistakes I see around the young guys that I'm watching, and they're doing good. They're just going to learn from experience like the rest of us.
Shooting is not generally the problem.
Shooting's not the problem
anymore.
Patience.
Patience is a big part of it.
Yeah.
You know, if you want a mature deer and you want the bigger antlers, you can't take it if you shoot the little one.
Yeah.
So you have to have patience to let them walk.
Yeah.
And it's hard to do. It's hard to do. And on like a velvet buck, you probably shoot a little bit smaller velvet buck than you would a normal buck because, you know, he's got velvet. That's going to look good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I took my first velvet last year, score-wise, which doesn't matter. He scored good.
No, it doesn't matter.
But he was a young buck.
Yeah.
And, you know, I didn't realize that we'd had pictures of him, didn't we, Jerry? And,
yeah.
And him and another.
But you enjoyed.
Oh, I enjoyed
that immensely.
But when I grabbed a hold of him, I was like, man, I could pack him up by myself.
But, you know,
but his rack was big.
Right,
but
I don't want people to feel that way.
But I felt like I may have should have let, age-wise,
yeah.
I probably maybe should have let him go. But it happens. He just fooled me.
Well,
and
you
I got
if you do the right
emotion.
Thing, you got some does you can shoot, and you got Ohio. You
know, yeah.
Or you can help somebody else hold.
Yeah.
You still hunt.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So it's a... But I will tell you, I messaged you last year about a buck, if you can remember, on Facebook, and he was a big 8-pointer. Yeah. And I'd send you a picture of him, and I asked your advice about him, and you said you maybe pass him if you're seeing a bigger one, which I did. And the good news is that's who I'm going after is Saturday.
See, he's there. If you get him, I want the first picture.
I will for that's sure. I'll good. Send that first picture. You know, he's a 9-pointer this year, but he's a. Hey, will you get that, Jerry? That's Nick and them.
That's something though to get to watch, and that's what the game cameras do now. Is you get to watch that progression so much more.
Yeah.
And shed hunting, I'm really big into shed hunting. The last couple of years, I ain't been able to do as much of it, but I probably have found over 200 sheds.
Yeah.
And I would used to go in Ohio and everywhere. That's like that game camera. When you find that, that's the progression. Mm-hmm. You know, I saw this buck. You know, I didn't get to get him, but he's still alive.
Yeah.
And the game cameras are a tool.
They're a tool, big time. You know, Alan, there's something I didn't mention this before we come on, but when I get a hunter like yourself on, I always like to ask them this question. You know, in the mid-90s, the Mitch Rompola buck, do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Now, when Mitch took that buck and everybody was giving him a hard time, there's Ricky, and I was one of those guys. I was just young and jealous, and I was like, oh, man, you know, he made that buck up and stuff. Well, as I've grown older and realized what it takes to kill a mature buck, and that it's not about killing that mature buck, it's everything comes before killing that mature buck, I now know Mitch would have got nothing out of that. That's my opinion. What do you feel about that?
Well, about the same way, about like that. It's all the preparation that guy had to do.
And he killed a lot more big bucks than that one.
Imagine, you know, there's always luck involved, and without that luck, you know, we're in trouble.
Yeah.
But imagine all the energy he put into that.
Yeah.
And some guys get lucky and they put a little less energy into it than others, depending on their hunting area and their level of expertise and stuff like that. Some guys just got a great buddy. You know, great buddies are a big help. Let's say you've already harvested your buck and you go tell Jay, check this out.
Yeah.
Look at this game camera. This buck is here. Mm-hmm. You know, now you've helped him. And now he can go, and that's what these guys do.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of preparation.
Well, Mitch was much like yourself. I mean, you guys was killing big bucks about the same time. Maybe he was a little early than you. But I just always thought about that. I was like, you know, that guy was killing 160-inch bucks back then. Yeah, he would have got nothing out of that.
I met him.
Did you meet him?
Yeah, years
back. Well, what did you think about that? I'd love to meet him.
Well, back then, that was all about the scents and stuff. You know, there was, you know, there's a big company deal with that and stuff. And I just talked to him for a minute, like I met Roger Agon one time on the show, and they're just fun to talk to.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we'd love to do a podcast with them.
I would love to.
Oh, yeah. But, Essence of Fall, I was kind of like their little poster boy for a year.
Yeah.
And, stuff like that is, it's good. It's good for hunting.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and, now everything is, instead of the magazines, the kids are getting magazines, everything, you know, is on the internet.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and stuff. But I still like to read the magazines.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
You can't get away from the magazines. No, that's the good stuff. All the good stuff's in there. And
well, you know what? One day you're going to be that guy. I think so. I think you guys can do it.
I don't know.
You know, and Kyle, you know,
yeah.
With the video.
Yeah.
That's great stuff.
Well, I hope I can just pass it along like you passed it on to us.
Yeah.
To someone else, and then that's how you keep it going.
I hope you do, brother. I really do.
You know what I mean. I hope. Which like Kyle and some of these other young guys, I want to teach them because the way I watched you and some of you other guys that came way before me. But
you'll have to go hunting with me sometime. We'll have to do a trip somewhere.
You know? See, if you think about this, in early 90s, I talked to you with this buck right here.
Mm-hmm.
I met you at the Predator tournament. I think it's the third time that we've talked face to face.
I believe so.
That's kind of crazy, ain't it? Yeah. What? That's my wife, Jordan, right there, deer hunting, Ricky. You know Alan?
I don't think I do.
Oh, my goodness.
Nice to meet you.
Alan Grubb?
I've heard of him. Okay.
That's the Roger Raglan right there of the day.
Not so sure of all that, but.
Jerry?
Not so sure.
He was one of the first to kill the big mature bucks consistently when, you know, without the cameras and all that stuff.
I'm out now. You guys are in now.
You still know. You know how to do it with all the goodies that we use.
I had the energy. We was talking about that the other day that used to be about this time of year, I'd probably have 10 stands up and I'd walked Lord knows how many miles, and that's before the game cameras and stuff like that, and binoculars. I'm a big proponent of long distance watching with binoculars, you know, and stay out of his area and try to watch him from far. And we would just hours and hours of binoculars just use. And that's another thing. People don't know how, what a tool they're missing if they're not using one when they bow hunt.
Yeah.
You cannot believe the amount of deer you're missing. I talked a boy into it last year of getting him a good set, and the first thing he did when he came back, he said, "I cannot believe the amount of deer I'm seeing."
Yeah.
He said, "I didn't know they were there. They're there. You're not seeing them. And they'll just stand there and let you walk past them.
Yeah.
They're slick." And so, you know, the use of a good pair of binoculars and use them in close. You don't have to, 400 yard stuff don't work.
Right.
Get in there 35, 40 yards. You'd be surprised what you'll see with them.
Mm-hmm.
And guys learn to use them.
That's just another little trick, you know, one of your tricks.
It is. If you're not using them, try them.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, people, I can't even go hunt without them. I can't. It's like my safety harness. I can't get in the tree without it.
Yeah.
It drives me nuts.
So it's just something that you've used for years.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Alan, you know, around here, if you don't mind me asking, you know, what would be your favorite time of year to hunt in this area here, Eastern Kentucky, Southern Ohio?
Well, in Kentucky, because of our seasons coming, everybody's going to gun hunt. October, about the 24th, 25th, right in there, November 10th. That is your prime time right there to get one that come out of the woodwork that you normally wouldn't even get to see. They start moving then, they start checking scrapes and making scrapes, and if you learn to hunt then, you got to be careful then too. They're not just stupid,
right?
But and then late season is really good, because once all that gets done, they key in on food, and that's what you need to do too. And not everybody's got a good place to hunt where there's that late season food, but if you can, you can really see some nice deer then.
All right. Yeah. Well, what's your approach on scrapes, or do you even deal with?
A little. I tend to pay 90% of my time on does.
Mm.
If I know where a couple doe bedding grounds are, that's where I want to be, in and around them, downwind of them and stuff. Used to be, when we was hunting these ridges, we found out years ago, me and another buddy, that the bucks, they use them different than a lot of people. They just don't get right on top and walk. They do what we was calling like a, kind of like a graph.
Mm-hmm.
That buck would walk on the back side of the ridge, and he would come up and scent check over that ridge and back down, and then he may do it 100 yards, you know, little loops like that long. And we would try to catch him on that, and we started learning. Me and a buddy named Tony Key,
mm-hmm.
Learned that they do that. And a lot of times you can catch them doing that during the rut, checking scrapes. Their scrapes would be on their side.
Yeah.
And so I tend to hunt the does.
I hope y'all's listening to this, and you need to listen two or three times. I mean, there's little tricks that, you know, I've hunted for a long time, and that's stuff that I never paid attention to.
If you had game cameras on the ridge and you put it on the other side of the scrapes, you'll see them bucks.
Mm-hmm.
Not every ridge they can do that on, but where they can use the wind, and they'll stick their head up and smell.
Uh-huh.
You know, they know, they're kind of like, they know that they're skyline themselves.
See,
big bucks, they're smart.
Unintentionally, it's kind of what I done with my buck in Ohio last year, because I had actually gotten a funnel, and I waited for the wind to blow, you know, the right way, because it was kind of a cliff in the middle, you know, on both sides of that funnel. They had to come through there, and I waited for the wind to blow on that side, and what he was doing was hugging that, like you said, but he was scent checking as I shot the funnel, because there was a scrape line up through
that
funnel.
He probably stuck his nose up and popped right over, yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what he
was
doing.
And he probably had other places like that he was checking and doing it.
Yeah.
Now, that's in that, you know, ridge area, but swamps or something, it would be a little different. I didn't hunt a whole lot of that, but mostly ridges and stuff like that.
Well, when they're doing that, I mean, they're covering as much ground.
A lot more than people think.
As they can, and that's why the terrain is so important to hunt, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You know,
thermals play a big part in it. Earlier in the season, when that gets on, you need to kind of, it's like gun season. If they find a lot of sign of, they think the deer's over here, don't get on that ridge and hunt. Get on this ridge.
Yeah.
Down about 3/4 of the way down. Now you can see back up the ridge you're on, and you can watch that ridge in front of you. And I usually like to do it up towards the end of the hunt.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you also have the bowl, maybe 100 yards over here, and you cover so much more ground that way.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them deer they'll come in on like it, and they'll just pop over the ridge and give you a shot. They won't stay in there long, you know. If they do, they'll smell you.
Yeah.
But that's with a gun to hunt like that.
Yeah. So there's all kind of tips and tricks, and man, I tell you, time flies when you're having fun, Alan.
Oh, yeah, it sure does.
Hey, I appreciate you coming up, Alan. I appreciate you stopping me here
25
years ago.
And
pumping me up. I was tickled to death, and it's good to chat with you all the time, and I appreciate you, you know, answering me all the time. I ask you questions like I'm a little kid, so
anytime.
I appreciate you putting up with me.
Right.
And hey, everybody, it's Alan Grubb and Rob Marchand, Hunting That Lab. We'll see y'all later.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.